someone is going to do something on the cooperative bill, even though it's still coming. But today I know that some of the things, even on the strategy, will be in the bill. I'm Tumzani Kameta. I forgot to say that. I'm chairing this committee. I want everybody to introduce me and herself.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Kamtileni. I'm the committee secretary of this committee.
Good morning. Arun Mguni from the Free State.
Oh, please, KZN.
Good morning. I'm Dave Abrams from Gauteng.
Good morning, I'm Elsa Findlingen from the Eastern Cape.
Morning, Jomo Nyambi from Pumala.
Good morning, Masoko Dekhale from Limpopo.
Good morning, I'm Abdullah Hanif, the committee researcher.
Good morning, I'm Melanie Puri from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, I'm Jolene Hendrik from Cabinet.
Good morning, I'm Cyril Schneider, DTI.
Suppose we go to DTI.
I'm Justin from the DTI.
I'm realizing now that I just read your project, DTI. Thanks, the chairperson.
Let us give it to the official staff to keep it up.
Okay, thanks very much, chairperson. Good morning to all. Chair, we prepared ourselves to do presentations on three areas, but we'll be focusing more on the strategy for the promotion of co-ops. But obviously, we are also busy doing the amendment of the co-ops Act of 2005. I think it all started when the Co-ops Act of 2005 was approved by government and it was enacted into the Act in 2005. Thereafter, we had to develop the regulations to implement what the Co-ops Act talked about. When we were requesting the public comments on the regulations, we realized that instead of people commenting on the regulations, they were commenting on the Act itself, which then necessitated that we had to look at the Act itself and then effect the comments of the public, because there were so many and so profound that we just couldn't ignore them. So the regulations were then approved by the minister in 2007. But then around about 2008, we started the process of amending now the Act itself, incorporating those comments. But the process has been to and fro. In the meantime, we had to also start developing the strategy. As you know, every democracy, you know, allow all stakeholders to comment on the strategy and have delayed a bit because of stakeholders commenting from time to time, and we also try to make sure that we incorporate all the comments from all sectors of the society. Then what happened is that we also decided that to assist this process of developing the strategy and also amending the Act, we have to visit all the 9 provinces, more especially the Provincial Economic Development Department, just to strengthen the collaboration and delivery of government at all levels, and to find out really hot issues pertaining to the development of co-ops and small business in the province that are hindering the development and the contribution of these entities into the economy. So the Deputy Minister then visited all the nine provinces, the Economic Development Department, accompanied by officials. We developed a report. Unfortunately, she couldn't come and present the report to Parliament before the change that was effected by the President at cabinet level last year. So, but we thought that it would make sense if we also bring that report to this committee so that you could see that the work of the Deputy Minister and the processes of developing the strategy and amending the Act are all influencing the process of amending the legislation. So we do have the provincial visits report by the former Deputy Minister of DTI, Marianne Tuli, which really informed the strategy and the Amendment Act. Jeff is going to be focusing more on doing the integrated package on promotion of core. And then after that, I think we will then take questions. But we will be guided by you, Chair. If you want us to do a little bit of presentation on the amendment bill itself, I think we can do that. But we thought the strategy talks about all the things that are there in the Amendment Act, so there is no need to both presentations. So with those few words of introduction, I'll let Jeff to go through the slides. Thank you.
Thank you, TG, and thank you, Chairperson. And also thanks to the members of the Select Committee. I will go straight to the strategy. These are the outlines on I'm going to touch on, members of the committee. Just give you an introduction, the background, and also just look at what is the status of cooperatives globally and why is it important for us, South Africa, to take this segment of the industry very seriously. And then also we'll touch on the best practice, because when we developed the strategy, we also went out to look at the international best practice. What is the world doing around this particular area, which in a way was then informing the development of the strategy. We'll also touch on what is the reality in South Africa with regard to cooperatives at this juncture, what are the challenges that are there, and then how do we see this strategy really responding to those challenges that were picked up. Some of those challenges articulated by the provinces in the Deputy Minister's report, you will see them, they come out very sharply there. And then some of them really came out of the researches that were conducted. Visits to various countries were conducted, as well as also our own DTI research that looked at the status of cooperatives in South Africa and come up with some recommendations were also built into the strategy document. And then we will then touch on principles that inform the entire strategy, and then also the approach of the strategy, and then also what are the programs. What are these, the programs and the institutional arrangements that really will guide the implementation of the strategy and grow cooperatives in South Africa. Now, let's just start with the vision. The vision really is towards a growing, self-sustainable, integrated cooperative sector, supported by all stakeholders, contributing to economic growth, poverty reduction, and employment creation, as well as assisting in bringing about economic transformation and equitable society. So broadly speaking, we have made sure that this vision is fully aligned with the vision currently of our national policy on cooperatives. So that was developed in 2004. Now the mission is the following: to strengthen the potential benefits of cooperatives by raising the value and the profile of cooperatives in the economy, designing support programs suitable for this end, foster human capital development with a special focus on core principles, business management and technical skills, and then foster a culture of cooperation, self-help, self-reliance, solidarity among cooperative beneficiaries and beyond through raising awareness. So that is what we also, the mission of the strategy. And then lastly, to work towards self-sustainability of the cooperative movement in the medium to long term, which will be achieved through partnership models and by consistently capacitating all stakeholders during the formation years and beyond. Now, in terms of the objectives, the objectives of the strategy are very simple and straightforward. It's to grow all forms and types of cooperatives and its movement generally, as well as increase its contribution to the country's GDP growth rate, economic transformation, and social impact, to promote co-ops as a vehicle that can assist in creating decent employment. And I do know, members of the cell community, there is a raging debate in South Africa whether we should create any employment or we should focus on decent employment. We are of the view that this particular area of cooperatives must really emphasize the issue of decent employment and reducing poverty through income-generating activities. Because we believe that, indeed, decent employment entails growth and it entails increasing the standard of living of our people. To support cooperatives in developing their human resource capacities, understanding co-op's principles and values through the provision of technical entrepreneurship, management skills, co-op's education and training. To increase savings and investment through the promotion and support of the cooperative banks and financial services cooperatives. And then to foster cooperation among co-ops through supporting the creation of the vertical structure of co-ops and conducting awareness campaigns. To raise the profile of cooperatives as a dynamic and effective business organization that can be utilized by individuals and communities to empower and uplift their social and economic well-being through also carrying out awareness campaign in this regard. And then to raise the profile of cooperatives as an institution that allows agglomeration of small economic activities and also ensure that people do indeed buy in what you call bulk buying, economies of scale, economies of massive scale and breadth, and that is what cooperatives really do play a role in that regard, creating market linkages into the economy and enabling what we regard as vulnerable groups to be able to compete with the big players or medium players when they come together and agglomerate. That's what cooperatives do provide. And then to aggressively promote those cooperatives that constantly attract high levels of membership and also provide captive market so that when you do have those cooperatives, they are able to have a market that is captive for those members that are joining it. To promote co-op as an effective vehicle that contributes to the development of rural and peri-urban areas, as well as improve economic and social well-being of the targeted groups. Here we're talking of black people, women, the youth, and people with disabilities. Now, what is the reality of cooperatives globally, members of the Select Committee? What we have discovered through the research and also engaging with the cooperative movement globally is that cooperative is a highly successful business model worldwide. Countries like United States of America, Germany, and all the developed countries, it is a very successful business model. And it is, in a way, our belief that it is relevant for South Africa and it will, in a way, play a very critical role in our development drive. Just to take, for example, the revenue of the world's top 300 cooperatives, if we take the top 300 cooperatives worldwide, they exceed $1 trillion, really, equal to the world's 10 largest economies. So this is a very serious business model. Though in South Africa it has not dawned to our people that is a model that has to be taken very seriously, it is indeed globally a very serious one. International cooperative movement represents 800 million members, more than the total population of the entire European continent. Cooperatives in Germany and France create 440,000 and 700,000 jobs respectively. In the Kenyan economy alone, 45% of the GDP and 31% of gross national savings are contributed by the cooperatives. And the co-op also control market for coffee, cotton, and dairy. In the U.S., more than 100 million people, or 40% of the population, are members of the cooperatives. So this is very profound. It tells us that, indeed,
this is the segment of the economy that we cannot ignore in South Africa if we're very serious about developing this economy. So we have to be able to develop cooperatives aggressively. Now, we went out as well to look at what is the international best practice globally around this. We looked at Canada. In Canada, we find that there is a favorable legislation. There is also intergovernmental coordination that's very strong in a way of coordinating all government activities towards the development of cooperatives. There is also a strong partnership between government and the cooperative movement. And then there is also an emphasis towards the formation of secondary cooperatives as a way in which you link up primary cooperatives and build economies of scale and also ensure market linkages into the global, into the economy and allow those that are small to be then linked into the market. Also, there is an emphasis on cooperative education and training through universities there. When we look at Spain, we find that there is indeed also a favorable legislation. In fact, cooperative is insisted upon in the constitution of Spain. It is a commitment that government has written not only just in the legislation but into the constitution itself. The intergovernmental coordination is also strong there. And then, of course, Spanish government provides financial and non-financial support to cooperatives. And then also there is tax benefits that are given to cooperatives, and all of that is detailed into the strategy itself. And education and training is also provided through universities and on a massive scale in those countries. In Kenya, there is also a legislation that really supports cooperatives. Moreover, there is a ministry of cooperatives that has been established, the entire department, which has branches throughout the economy of Kenya in a decentralized manner to support cooperatives. There is strong partnership between the cooperative movement and government. And then, of course, on education and training, there is a cooperative college that has been established, dedicated to provide education and training to co-ops. And then, of course, financing cooperatives is done through the Cooperative Bank and the National Cooperative Bank, which has various, what you call it, cooperative institutions underneath it. And then, of course, there is also a conflict resolution system which they've established in Kenya, which is the to resolve conflict in that country. And then in Bangladesh, similarly, there is a support in legislation and fully-fledged Department of Cooperatives. And then, of course, Cooperative College and the Cooperative Bank are also support instruments that are there. And then in Italy, the constitution of Italy emphasize the establishment of cooperatives, and then, of course, it also emphasizes self-sufficiency of the cooperative movement, and also there is a partnership between government and the movement itself in the development of cooperatives. And then on procurement, the procurement policies are designed in such a way that they target the development of cooperatives. So you do have certain segments of particular products that are ring-fenced, particularly to the development of cooperatives, social cooperatives, and various levels of cooperatives that are targeted by that government, particularly also worker cooperatives. And then also there is an emphasis on reserve funds and solidarity funds, which are made into law, which are designed to provide funding to cooperatives and ensure that all cooperatives do contribute to those solidarity funds to ensure the healthiness and growth of cooperatives as a whole. In India, similarly, the constitution of that country espouses the development of cooperatives. Strong cooperative movement is in India. In fact, the biggest cooperative movement in the world is found in India. And it is supported by government, and there is direct financial and non-financial support that is given by government to the cooperative sector. So as you can see, globally, this is the reality. All the countries that are successful on cooperatives have gone out to a very favorable legislation to put instruments on the ground to support cooperatives. Within the context of South Africa, what is the reality on cooperatives? Currently, I would say, members, we have, in terms of the registrar, CIPRO, which is CIPRO, the registrar of cooperatives, we have 22,619 registered cooperatives in terms of the book of the CIPRO. And then the drive for this growth in registration Because let us know very clear, it is purely just registration. We're going to talk about what is the potential of these crops to survive and also to be sustainable, which is completely a different picture from the registration. We can see that the 2005 Act has also, in a way, acted as an impetus to the development of this particular reality, where we have seen growth during this period of massively of registration on cooperatives, and also support programs that have been provided have given rise to the growth in registration. And then, but what we have come to realize is that most of these cooperatives, they are either dormant, where they do exist, they are very much vulnerable and weak, and the potential for them to be sustainable are very much questionable at the moment. And then we're going to answer what are the factors that are really contributing to that reality. Now, then this is the picture when you spread it in terms of provinces of the registration. And as you can see, KwaZulu-Natal 8%, Eastern Cape 19%, and then Gauteng 10%. And then that's how it is spread out, this registration. So you could see that KZN is the lead here in this regard. And members will recall that there was a massive drive of cooperative in KZN that was driven by the MEC there of economic development. That's why you see that particular picture there strong in the provinces. And of course, sector-wise, agriculture still dominates, 25%, 17%, service, and then multi-purpose 14%. And then the rest of those issues that the other sectors that registered small numbers there. Now we ask a question. What is the survival rate or the sustainability of these registered cooperatives? We carried out in 2008 a study, a survey, to look at what's existing in the market, not what is in the register, what is in there in the market. I mean, I must say that, members, what we discovered is that 2,644 could only be confirmed to be operating in the economy. Though that report is not entirely conclusive because some of the issues were difficult to access all the cooperatives because some of them, their addresses could not be known and where they are, and some have moved and they are not operating in one place. But by and large, the picture is the one that tells us that, broadly speaking, the minorities of the cooperatives are the ones that have survived, the ones that are operating in the economy. So it tells us that 88% of cooperatives are, in a way, at a mortality rate. That is at a mortality level. So there is a huge challenge here that really confronts us all in this particular area. Now, if we look at that rate and we break it down in terms of sectors, you will see how it impacts on those different sectors. Food and agriculture, 89%, services, 91.5%, and then those are the numbers as well as the percentage in terms of the survival rate, 11%, 12.5% for the arts and manufacturing and arts and craft, 30%, 29%, and 27% for the others. And then they go accordingly there. But the picture is just a consistent one. High mortality rate across all the sectors of cooperative. Now, and then we ask, what's the current contribution at this particular juncture of those that are existing? And then we could get the data from CIPRO up to 2007, which tells us that at least we're looking at, in terms of the total, in red terms, 7 billion. That is the 7.1 billion of contribution by cooperatives to the South African GDP in value terms. And if we break it down by those sectors that are reporting, because the others don't report at the moment, those that are reporting, you could see that we're talking of a 0.33% of the country's total GDP in that particular regard, in terms of the overall contribution to the economy, given the sectors that are there. Now, what is the challenges? They are supports that have been there. I mean, we've got AFGISA, we had National Youth Strategy, we had BE Strategy, the Anti-Poverty Strategy. All of these strategies were, in one way or another, trying also to support the development of cooperatives. And so, undoubtedly, what we are saying is that this strategy that we are proposing is is not coming into the area where there is a vacuum completely. But there have been some attempts. But there are challenges, though, where there are these particular attempts, which I'm going to just outline. One of the challenges that we've come to realize is that, just as looking at the data itself, you know, we don't have reliable data across the whole economy where we could give you a detailed breakdown of the cooperative and the impact into the economy. And therefore, one of the things as government that we need to do is to develop that particular capacity to be able that we can then be able to provide you with very up-to-date and accurate data on a continuous basis. And secondly, there are some challenges on coordination, particularly at the level of government, provinces, right up to the local levels of government. These are the issues that also the report of the Deputy Minister also touch on, which we need to strengthen, and also coordination with the movement itself and the government. And then there's the limitation of the current support from existing enterprise development agencies for cooperatives. If you look at the current institutions that are there, CEDA, CULA, SAMAF, and the rest of IDC and the rest of those, when you look at it critically, their core mandate has never been cooperative. Most of them, most of their core mandate, you find that for the IDC is big, medium to large enterprises. For CEDA, it's small business, and for the others also, it's very much on small business. Cooperative is always seen as the appendage that has to be supported after the fact. So what it then means is that, in that regard, there is no centralized capacity, centralized skill, and centralized knowledge to really dedicate that support towards the cooperative movement. And this has been the limitation. Where some of the support is being provided, it tends to be ad hoc, it tends to be not systematic, and it's not well structured and coordinated and centralized and systematized in that regard. And then what it then results, it results in the picture that you saw of high mortality rate, whereby we are not changing the picture, though we're investing huge amounts of money that are going there into those agencies. Few of those really are dedicated to cooperatives. That is the challenge that we're facing. And then also, the recognition of cooperatives as a unique business form and diversity in the public and the private sector remains very low. The perception in South Africa is that, you know, cooperatives is for those that are poor. People don't realize that cooperatives, in fact, in some other countries, dominate certain segments of markets. And in fact, they have a very critical role. They can be a very formidable business. But it is always seen as it's one of those for the poor, which is a very wrong perception about cooperatives. In fact, what it does, it gives rise to neglect, rise to lack of focus and lack of attention to cooperatives. And it's something that we need to change, both within the public sector, in government itself, and even also in the private sector. So this is one of the things that needs to be changed in South Africa. Accessibility of cooperative registration to local communities. At the moment, registration is in federal. Provinces are requesting for decentralization of registration so that we can make that registration available to communities where they are located and make it much cheaper and make it easily accessible. So that is also one of the challenges that we see. Limited promotion and awareness on cooperatives is also another challenge. And then, of course, we do have a number of, like, stock firms and all these other entities that give rise, that lend themselves that they can be cooperatives and be formalized. But most of them, because of the requirement to pay tax and all these other particulars, when you're formalized, they tend to stay outside the cooperatives and they don't want to be formalized. And this is also an issue that really challenges these informal self-help groups. And this is another area that we need to address. There is also limited access to finance as a challenge for cooperatives. And mostly cooperatives, because of the democratic nature of ownership within the cooperative itself, it doesn't lend itself really to equity finance and all those kinds of instruments that are available to other forms of businesses. What then this thing does, it then makes banks and even other financial institutions not to lend to cooperatives in a big scale that we would want to see. And in that regard, they are become risk averse towards cooperatives and in providing finance. Then, of course, There is also limited access to technology for cooperatives and also limited to business infrastructure. You will see in the report the actual strategy itself. Most cooperatives operate in their backyard of houses. That's where they use it as their offices. There is no business infrastructure where they can be able to do their business in a normal way that other forms of business do. And this is a big challenge that needs to be addressed. Poor management and technical skills is a big issue among cooperatives, which also undermines sustainability. Limited trust and social cohesion. Most of those that still join cooperatives do not subject themselves to the principle of sharing and the principle of cooperation, which is the key principle within the cooperative. And therefore, it sometimes gives rise to conflict. It gives rise to an area whereby there are, in some instances, mismanagement, where certain big men are developing within the cooperatives who believe that the cooperatives is for them and them only, not for the members as a whole, which then also undermines the sustainability of cooperatives. And then, of course, as I say, that the democratic decision-making skills within the cooperatives is an issue that needs to be addressed as a non-financial support so that we can then ensure sustainability. And then, moreover, there is limited cooperation among co-ops. One of the principles for cooperatives is cooperation among cooperatives. But in South Africa, that is yet to be achieved. And it's something that we need to educate cooperatives to start cooperating across value chains so that they can be able to ensure sustainability and growth. And then, of course, the issue of individual interest sometimes tends to really undermine collective interest within cooperatives. Where people go in there, believing that these are like small businesses, whereas that's not the case, other forms of small businesses. It's mine, whereas within the cooperatives it has to be, it's for us, a collective interest that should drive that. And then of course, the other issue that is still a challenge, most members of cooperatives have not embraced the key principle for cooperatives, self-reliance. This is critical, so that where they have to look first to their resources before they can ask is support from the external stakeholders. Self-reliance must be insisted upon so that becomes the issue that is built within the cooperative. Compliance with legislation among the new co-op. Most cooperatives that have been formed are not submitting their annual reports to the registrar because so that we can see when we have invested on them, particularly on CIS and all the other funds that we give them. We do want to see them really reporting every year how they are doing with those investments that we put in there. That's one of the issues that needs to be changed. And then networks and also economic value chains of cooperatives are underdeveloped. They are not that strong, and it's something that needs to be built. And then there is also limited access to markets, where in some instances you do find that cooperatives are facing a challenge whereby other forms of business, when it comes to them, when they have to buy inputs, those inputs are raised in prices because they are cooperatives. Where some of the competitors collude with their suppliers in a sense of undermining the development of cooperatives, raising prices and make it completely inaccessible to cooperatives. That's one of the challenges that we need to confront in the market out there. And then broadly, we need to make access to markets in terms of procurement and all of those issues to cooperatives. It's one of the challenges. And then, of course, there is also a challenge with regard to associations of cooperatives that are still weak, and those organizations in other countries have played a key role in the development of cooperatives. In South Africa, they're still underdeveloped, they're still weak. We need to strengthen them and build their capacity. Now, in terms of the principles of the strategy, what we are espousing really is to say that all tiers of government must play a role in the development of cooperatives. That is the principle that this strategy espouses, together with the bill and the act as well. They are saying that all tiers of government must play a role in this particular space. So that for us is very much important. And then what we're saying there for provinces is that we are proposing the establishment of the National Cooperative Development Agency as well as the Cooperative Academy, and we're saying that provinces must play a role there. They must be able to support, and we decentralize those institutions right up to the level where they are going to be accessible to ordinary members. And then we create, through those institutions, a one-stop shop where we build one capacity in one place to be able to support the development of cooperatives. So for us, that is critically important. And then also we are saying that even extra-parliamentary players must play a role in the development of cooperatives. Your NGOs, CBOs, labor organizations and church and cooperative movement. And in fact, there are some recommendations that we do make as an addendum into the strategy on how some of these players can play a role in the development of cooperatives in the economy. Also, we're saying that these are the focus of the strategy. We're going to focus on developing youth, women, people living with disabilities. And then also we are going to focus on the areas, peri-urban areas, and also homeland areas and the rural areas of South Africa, so that we could then ensure that cooperatives do indeed target those communities and grow those communities where there is high level of unemployment and high level of poverty there. And then, of course, also what we're saying is that all forms of cooperatives, both social and enterprise, will be promoted and will be supported through this strategy. We are saying that the focus of the strategy will be to develop the entire value chain of cooperatives, from the raw material right up to the level of distribution in terms of sales, the retail segment of the economy. And then there are four pillars that the strategy is really proposing. Pillar one is to increase non-financial support services to cooperatives. And then pillar two is to really increase demand for cooperative products and services by providing access to market. Pillar three is to improve the sustainability of cooperatives. We've got programs geared for that. And then the last pillar will be to increase financial support for cooperatives. All of this is underpinned by efforts aimed at improving issues of information and knowledge, research, communication, outreach, education and training, and monitoring. This will underpin the strategy. So these are the programs that are really articulated in each pillar. We've got the Cooperative Business Development Support Program, which will focus primarily on non-financial support, developing issues, providing issues such as developing the capacity building for cooperatives, the entire vertical structure of cooperatives, apex movement right up to the primary movement, cooperative principles, technical skills, management skills, mentorship, access to market support, as well as build incubation that are going to incubate cooperatives and make sure that cooperatives through that non-financial support is developed. Also, we're going to provide education and training to ensure compliance with cooperatives, and this we're going to do it through the education and training agency. And then we're going to provide enforcement, investigation, and conflict resolution and ensure that there is an inspectorate that goes out and inspect where principles of cooperatives are violated and remove them. All of this we're going to do it through the cooperative tribunal that we're proposing in the bill and we're proposing in the strategy. And also where there are conflicts, we're going to resolve those conflicts through that tribunal. Registration of cooperatives will be administered by CIPRO. We are going to provide access to market. We're going to facilitate cooperatives to look at some of the opportunities that are available through the bilateral agreements and multilateral agreements and provide those information and those opportunities available to cooperatives and ensure that they start exporting into those countries, taking full advantage of those agreements. And then also through the annual program that is available, we are taking cooperatives to pavilions, global pavilions, national pavilions, local and domestic pavilions, so that we expose their products to those particular markets. And then also, we've got 10 targeted products that are available for cooperatives as well as small business. And as those were waiting for the National Treasury to really provide a particular a guideline in that particular respect. So we think that cooperatives will also benefit. Enterprise Network Program is a vertical and horizontal program which we are going to administer it through the Cooperative Development Agency. Its particular design is to build the vertical structure of cooperatives so that we support the apex body, we build capacity of the apex body, the secondary cooperatives, as well as also build the entire vertical structure of cooperatives. Where cooperatives want to be able to do feasibility studies to create market linkage is an agglomeration, this program is going to assist in that particular regard. And then also we are encouraging municipalities and also the Department of Public Works to provide business infrastructure. We are going to be working closely with them to ensure that old buildings that are there, that are unutilized, infrastructure that is unutilized, we make those available to cooperatives for business infrastructure support. And then, of course, we are working with National Treasury to reform the taxation in South Africa and to make sure that there is a favorable tax regime for cooperatives so that cooperatives are not taxed like small business or they're not taxed like any other forms of businesses, but they are taxed taking into consideration the challenges and the uniqueness of cooperatives. Cooperatives don't make profit, ladies and gentlemen. They generate surplus. And a surplus is slightly different, is the overcharge on the services that cooperatives that receive from the cooperative itself. So that must be factored in on taxation. At the moment, it is not. They are taxed as if they are generating profit, which in fact is just a patronage refund on what they was, other than an overcharge. And then microfinance loan, we are also proposing that will be an issue that we are going to transfer it from SAMAF to the agency, because we want support to be on one house and specialization and collaboration to take place in one particular support services. The issue that cooperatives should be spread all over the place create confusion in the market, ladies and gentlemen. Cooperatives don't know which door to knock on, where to go, and they get confused. And we need to bring all the support services for cooperatives in one identifiable roof. And that's going to be the cooperative development agents that we're proposing in the strategy. We are going to also transfer the CIS, which is the incentive scheme. It's a grant that is designed to support startup cooperatives. As well as also we are proposing the cooperative special project fund, which will start from, it's a startup and expansion instrument, which will support small to medium cooperatives. And its focus primarily will be expansion rather than startup. CIS will focus mainly on startup in that regard. And then we are also calling for, we are going to undertake a massive awareness program where we then educate South Africa about cooperatives in all its form. How to run a cooperative, how does it differ with other forms of business, why the instruments that currently are used to support small business cannot work in the cooperative. They must be changed. At the moment, all these institutions that are there, your CEDAs, and are using instruments of small businesses and to support cooperatives. That must change. We need to use instruments and support that are suitable to the challenges of cooperatives. Cooperatives have got a business section, but they also have the association section. If you have to support them, those two aspects must be attended to fully, because the other undermines the sustainability of the other. If you don't tackle the association component part of the cooperative, it tends to undermine the development of the enterprise aspect of the cooperative. So the two must be attended to fully. Cooperative Academy is what we're also proposing, to provide education and training on cooperatives, to train them. We're going to customize training in South Africa. At the moment, we don't have available customized training and education and training that is suitable to cooperatives, that can speak to the uniqueness of cooperatives. So we're saying that through that institution, which we're going to decentralize through the provinces, we want to bring about that education and training. One of the principles of cooperatives is education and training. We must ensure that that principle is supported fully. And there is no way cooperatives are going to survive unless there is constant, uninterrupted education and training that is given to them on a constant basis. Also, we are going to do research and also monitoring evaluation on the support. So all the support that we're going to be providing, we're going to monitor it. We've got the provincial support committee that is established and the bill calls for that. We've got the Interdepartmental Committee on Cooperative Development, which also monitors and also provides reports. When we come to report to you, it is through these structures we're going to be able to collect the information throughout the economy and provide it to you as to how support is taking place throughout the country on cooperatives. There will also be the Cooperative Advisory Council that we are changing. It used to be called the Cooperative Advisory Board. And in that respect, it tends to be looked at as if it has legislative powers because it was using the connotation board. So we are changing that to say it's going to be a cooperative advisory council because its duty is very limited. It just has to advise the minister and it must make policy recommendations to the minister on improving the development of cooperatives. And in fact, this council, from time to time, it can come and report to the select committee and even to parliament on progress in that regard, independent of the department to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, how we're doing in this particular space. And then, of course, we are going to work closely with the cooperative movement, the labor movement, and also broadly the private sector in that regard. We are going to have the annual cooperative review report every year that we are going to churn out and give it out as a report on how we are really performing in this regard. And then we're going to have the 3-year mid-term review report, and then we're also going to have the 10-year comprehensive review report on showing how we are progressing in this regard. We are currently developing the ICT system so that all of these structures can report through that particular ICT system and then collate centralized data that will be available to all of us in terms of providing all the necessary information on cooperative development. We've got the action plan, which is an agenda, which we have attached in the strategy itself. It also speaks to broadly the action that will be implemented, and then also provide guidance to other role players on how the strategy must be implemented. I thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to my lengthy speech. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Chair, really by this, what we are trying to show is that, the strategy, really, we are not trying to, further the what people call this agentification of government, where it just establishes agencies after agencies. what we intend to do, really, is to look at the existing agencies and really rationalize and refocus their delivery mechanisms. We'll be looking at agencies like CEDA, whether we can't increase their capacity, increase the budget, so that part of CEDA could focus on the co-op's development. So these agencies we are talking about, we are still debating, but who knows, it might end up being, part of CEDA just to avoid creating new institutions, rolling out a new infrastructure. So even the so-called the training academy, we will be looking at the existing facilities, the educational system, whether we can't, house it there and decentralize it into the provinces and the municipalities. And of course, we're trying to develop a favorable legislation, like Jeff has been talking about, even the transition system and all these things. It has to be favorable, to the development of the co-ops movement in South Africa. Obviously, there's a big effort. We also go into training and, teaching people on how you form a co-op and what is the purpose of a co-op, really. Because at the moment, that's why we have such a high number of co-ops registered, but a very low survival rate. Because people, they just comply to the law, and 5 people, they form a co-op, but all the principles of cooperation are not there. As we all know, that the co-ops, their strength really, lie on the numbers. The more the numbers in a co-op, the stronger it becomes, because every member of the co-op put that 1 rand, 2 rand, but at the end of the day, it's something else. But that principle is not there at the moment. We find that people they think the co-op is just a mechanism to get incentives from government, and after that, nothing is happening. So by this strategy, really, we are trying to sort out or to resolve all these problems that are existing out there. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Mr. Zilote. But in the introduction, you did say, Mr. Zilote, and do the expand.
Yeah. No, thank you, Chair. I'm supposed to go there. The forever acting DDG of the Empowerment and Enterprise Development Division at the Department of Trade and Industry. And Mr. Jason Gumo here is the chief director. He is the main man when it comes to the co-ops development in South Africa within government. He is the one who is driving this movement of trying to build the co-ops movement in South Africa. Thank you, sir.
Well, thanks. That was important for us as a committee because there was an undertaking from the department that, you know, they are analyzing the acting part, the interview and so on. Not necessarily, but we just want some stability on that issue. Honourable members would say we have had this presentation now about cooperatives and cooperatives. Let's hear what the members have got to say. If there's not any questions, I'll start with Honorable Lee, then Honorable Abram, Honorable Van Leyen, Honorable Nyambi, Honorable De Halle. Honorable Sinclair. Okay, Honorable Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't know where to start really, except I'm about to burst into tears when I hear about all the plans and the money to try and put something in place which is a failure. Certainly in our own country, in the USSR, in Cuba, in it boggles the mind that we continue with this. But the interesting thing is that the stats are given to us about the US and Germany, I think, yeah, and France. But then the systems that are looked at don't include these countries where they're so apparently so extensive. I don't understand why we get told about the US $1 trillion and so on, which is a drop in the ocean, really. It's big for us, but for the U.S. economy, it's not. And yet we're looking at what happens in Kenya and Bangladesh and Spain and Canada. Why aren't we being told how the Yanks do it or the Germans? And then what form do these successful carbs take? I've said at this committee before. The carbs that are thrown at us as being successful in South Africa are not business carbs in the sense that we're talking about here. They were carbs which got involved in bulk services, but the for instance, in agriculture, I mean, the farmers operated as independent units. They didn't go and have big cooperatives because those are failures throughout the world. So I'd like to know what they're talking about particularly in the U.S., which is kind of the bastion of free market in the world. What kind of co-ops exist there? I'm not sure what is meant and the objectives by high levels of membership as captive market. I'm kind of concerned throughout the presentation is this constant reference to cooperation and so on, which to me sounds very like uncompetitive action, which we're hearing a lot about at the moment in the various industries, building industry, about uncompetitive behavior costing the taxpayer and others huge amounts of money. And, you know, this sounds like we pushing uncompetitive behavior in the co-ops, which would be in conflict with that legislation. And throughout the presentation, there's generalizations. There's really very nothing specific. We talk about favorable legislation. I don't know what that means. And so on, you go through. It's like that. I'm horrified that we're still looking at stats which are 2 years old. I know Cipro is a disaster, but surely we should be looking at stats which are not backdated to March 2009, and then also 2007 in terms of some of these stats. Is Cipro in such a mess that we can't get those stats brought up to date? There's an assumption, you know, I don't know how much empirical work has been done in all this, but there's an assumption here, and it was verbalized, was that the co-ops fail because they don't get the support. Well, perhaps they don't get the support because people recognize that they will fail. And the same applies to banks. I mean, you know, you don't put money in where the risks are so high. If you look at the recent history of co-ops, 80% failures, certainly not going to get private enterprise to support a failing system. I've talked about the anti-competitive sort of emphasis that seems to be coming through. And this emphasis on collective interest versus individual interest. We are individuals, and we will have individual interests. There is no way of escaping that. Absolutely no way of escaping that. Now, to try and convince people that their individual interests are best served by putting aside those interests and looking at the interests of the collective is, I think, an impossible task. You know, the question that co-ops aren't submitting their annual reports to CIPRA, I don't think there's a requirement for annual reports, is there? I think there's a requirement for an annual return to CIPRA, which is simply saying I still exist and my turnover for the last year was X, Y, or Z. But I might be wrong on that, because I don't really know much about the co-op act in that sense, what is required. I'm really quite concerned that an official of the state, Jeffrey, can talk about tiers of government. They are spheres. They are not tiers. And we need to get that through because there is, in our view, a constant threat to the federal nature of our government, and the officials cannot be part of that. The officials, the Constitution says that there are spheres of government which have their own powers and functions. They are not tiers, one answerable to the other. I'm fascinated by the tax breaks. I mean, in early in the presentation, it talks about individuals being forming co-ops. Now, co-ops to me, the word cooperative would exclude individuals, but it appears to raise the profile of cooperatives as a dynamic and effective business organization that can be utilized by individuals and communities. So you give tax breaks to co-ops, I mean, it's going to lead to a lot of us rushing there to get those tax breaks. Not because we want to be a co-op, because we want to get the tax rate. I don't know. I mean, SARS is, you're going to have a huge fight with Revenue Department of Finance on that one, I would think. If you can get that through, I'll be looking at it closely. And then the acting deputy did emphasize that we're not looking at additional agencies. But I mean, it says here quite clearly that microfinance loan through wholesale transferred from SAMAS to the Cooperative Development Agency, which I presume is a new agency. And then, of course, there is additional funding and additional staff. So the bureaucracy of the state just increases to try and achieve something that I believe is a lost cause to start off with. Mr. Chairman, I've made a lot of general comments which the officials can't respond to. but I would really like some response about why we quote stats from the States and Germany, but then we don't tell us, they don't tell us how, what exactly happens in those cooperative movements in those countries. And then the question of, I don't know how quite to put this, but let's leave it at that. I'm really keen to know, because I mean I've expressed my views about generally about health, and I apologize to the officials because it's really not what you're here for, but if I can understand why you think that it's important to look at countries such as Canada, Kenya, and others, and then tell us about the stats in the USA and Germany, and not look at what they do.
I was going to take all the questions. I must have a pad to write on. Honorable Abrams.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, a very interesting presentation. As you were going through the presentation, I was jotting down a few questions, but in turn, you actually asked the question and responded. It sounds like a presentation where we asked you questions in a previous meeting, and you actually came and responded, because as you were going along, it was what you're going to do. Sounds very positive. As a person who's been a counselor before I became a member of parliament in here, I've worked with co-ops, and yes, it's, some of them are successful for 1 month when the actual training and everything takes place. I think monitoring needs to be done. There's absolutely no monitoring. We've got people in the community that receive 1.5 million, 2, 3 million, and they're very enthusiastic. They form these co-ops, but somewhere along the line, they enrich themselves because of no monitoring. So maybe if you could look into the monitoring system. Then also, vulnerable groups, you've mentioned there that they will be included. I work with vulnerable groups too, and they are very, very marginalized. The disabled people in South Africa do not benefit from anything that happens in South Africa, so they too. You've also mentioned the capacity building, yes. When co-ops start, they get capacitated, they get all the business plans and everything, but the people don't understand. So you need to assist them when you bring it in and see bringing people with different capacities, because we'd like to empower people, but also we need to recognize their shortcomings. And I'd like you to tell me on the 10 programs, how will it be spread throughout South Africa? It's only 10 programs, and we've got many, many people that need assistance. Thank you.
Hello, Fondi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was waiting for my colleague to somewhere up here, and I have to agree that on you say people are doing the registration, but you want to bring it closer to the community. And yet, at the end, in one of the last slides, you say registration will remain with people. So, how are you bringing it to the community? Then, funding. You talking about limited access to finance. Now, I'm not so sure how you want to structure this through the bank, because what security will the people in the co-op have in the rural areas for finance in terms of collateral, or the bank to look at collateral? And very many of these people only have a RDP hub, which could then come under threat. The Cooperative Development Agency makes money stand on it, because it's another development agency, and there are too many development agencies within municipalities that do not work. They really do not work. In fact, in the Eastern Cape, I can't think of one. Slide 53, you also say the strategic pillar to creating demand for cooperative products and services. Well, I think we have a few more opportunities.
I don't know how you are going to cause demand to be created. Maybe you can give us some guidance there. Cooperative tribunal. Man, you will need a lot of jobs to be created just by the system that you want to create, because it sounds horrible. Fund follow function. Business infrastructure support. Municipalities to provide offices, you know? Municipalities do have a double function. One is development, developmental local government. But you know, they can hardly do and deliver the core functions of the delivery of municipalities. And what funds, or how are these funds being made available? Secondly, you say that the buildings must be provided, you know, buildings. All municipalities are having so many people employed that their salary component is above the 35%. So I don't know whether you're not just putting a responsibility on local government that cannot cope anyway. And I don't know how you're going to finance it. Then you talk about cooperative special project fund. So here we go. The cost, how you going to budget it, how you going to finance it, and what is the effect of management going to be? I didn't get the message. Maybe I was daydreaming during your speech. Again, later on, you talk about cooperative training academy. Funding follows function. And I think that's
hello, may you hear me?
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation that has been done this morning. Some of the questions have been covered. I'll do a time. I'll raise just a few. Maybe to understand, because there was another presentation that was done, if I'm not mistaken, last year about this issue of co-ops. To understand about this one, the link between the visit by the Deputy Minister to various provinces and the presentation, whether is it a total outcome of that or it's an outsourced function, you have had people that have compiled this for us, or it's an in-house thing. I want to get a clear comment, Chairperson, so that I can have a clear understanding. Maybe it will assist me in dealing with the other questions that I have. Then the second one, you are very clear that when presenting how provinces are performing, it was clear that one of the issues that you raised as a challenge, the one of limited promotion and awareness, it's a challenge. But when we're dealing with provinces, it was clear that the awareness that was done by the MEC in KwaZulu-Natal has really assisted that province to be way above than all the other provinces. So why are you still viewing it as a challenge if you are quite aware as the national sphere of government that if you can lead in terms of dealing with this issue of awareness, then you can overcome that? Then the last one, if you can assist us in dealing with the, you have made a comment about profit versus surplus when dealing with cooperatives. Do a little bit of elaboration in dealing with that so that
I can get a clear understanding. Then, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join my colleagues by welcoming the presentation. I heard the presenter talking about a decent job, and I don't know how do they classify these types of jobs. Maybe if I can get a clarity on that one, and even to say that our people in the rural areas, they are looking for anything, anything that can help them, let alone that decent job. And I want to talk about the coordination, monitoring, and evaluation that the department is coming up with. They are talking about the Department of Trade and Industry, government, cooperative movement, and other bodies. And I was thinking of, on these other bodies, why can't you include the traditional leaders? Because they are staying with these people in the rural areas, and they know how to work with them. And if ever they can go and report to them, maybe the mortality rate of our project can be reduced. And the other thing I want to talk about is the research that the department has done, and they have mentioned many countries, including India, and they are saying biggest co-op is found in India. And this really touched me, that how can we maybe help our people in the rural areas, take those that are having an interest of formulating the co-ops and take them to India so that they can go there and see what is it that the people are doing. Maybe this will also reduce the mortality rate of our project. I think this one of interest, the other ones we have covered. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, it seems to me that this presentation is to do with a complete new approach in terms of the challenges that we're experiencing regarding this up till now failure of engaging the sector, which is the cooperative one. That's why, I mean, the minister went so far to publish the notice in the Gazette that give people opportunities to respond and so on. So I think we mustn't lose focus about the turnaround strategy that's envisaged by the minister and government in terms of addressing this issue. So for me, I think we, at one stage or the other, certainly will also debate this issue in the House and formalize our interactions on that, and also make inputs in terms of what we, what our remarks would be regarding the issues published in the government today. But I think it's necessary to realize that in South Africa, there was a time when cooperative was part of a success story in building the economy of this country. Now, unfortunately, I must refer to the past, but that was the time after the British imperialists oppressed the Afrikaners, unfortunately, to a great extent. And there was a deliberate attempt to get, at that stage, the Afrikaners out of the trenches of poverty. And cooperatives played an instrumental role in achieving that. So maybe myself and people that think like the Honorable Lee got a fundamental difference in terms of how we approach this. I appreciate the viewpoint of the Honorable Lee, but I think, and my party believes, and that's why we are social democrats, the party cope,
Can I just say, we don't speak like the DA with two voices. We speak with one voice. The one said that, and the other one said that. Cope has got one voice, you know. So that part of our history, we can't ignore. And I think it's necessary to take lessons out of that chapter in our history in terms of success stories. The development of rural South Africa, to a great extent, was built on a strategy to have effective cooperatives. And you can go wherever. Unfortunately, during the time of the apartheid and the homeless, for various reasons, many of those things were neglected. But the way that you're going to uplift the rural, homeless, will be through this strategy. And in essence, it's to do with the management of the will of the collective. Our people, the rural people, with due respect, operate in units. They don't operate always in a typical capitalist fashion as individuals. They operate as units. And that's why it's necessary to manage this process. Now, the negative part for me is the part where government gets involved. And I'm happy for this, but in terms of many of the issues that's been presented in this presentation, we've heard that story before, about the different spheres of government being involved, the development financial institutions, and all those things. The reality is, if we don't have a very serious turnaround in terms of the attitude of people, the attitude of officials, the attitude of the ANC on this matter, we're not going to make this thing work. It is essential for the success of this to have an extreme coordinated approach. Now, I'm from the Northern Cape. I can tell you, and you would see it on the statistics, only 2.5% of the Northern Cape's cooperatives currently is functioning. The Northern Cape is the province that needs these type of things. But I can tell you, with the current structure in the Northern Cape and the personalities involved, this thing is going to fail. From the province to the districts to the municipality. Because there's too much political interference. That is one of the reasons. Many of our people, of the leaders on ground level, councillors, LED officials, are gatekeepers to promote the case of certain parties and certain individuals. So we must open up the sphere. Yes, it must be a structured environment, but we must open. So the point that I want to argue is the one about coordination and giving the people the right tools to do the thing. Which brings me to the point about the developmental financial institutions of Africa. The banks, the commercial banks, I agree with the Honorable Van Lingen. Forget them. They're useless. They're not developmentally orientated. People go there, they fill in forms this high. They want everything from the size of your underpants and everything. And afterwards they come and tell you, no, you don't have collateral and you don't qualify and you are a risk. We must create, and that's the success story of India. They created a bank that specifically dealt with this issue. And we must stop wasting the time of our people. I can tell you now how many applications I've got with the various institutions. It's a slap to convince those people, but this is a worthwhile project. So the point, Chairperson and officials, is this summer and Kula Direct and all those things, your officials, you said, you must tell these people, even the minister must instruct them to wake up. Otherwise, these things are not going to work. The last issue, Chairperson, is the issue about best practices. And the official of the DTI is here. I think one of the issues that we must engage as a committee is the success stories of cooperatives. And I honestly believe they are. So in terms of a proposal for a study tour, I would suggest to the chairperson that that's one of the issues that we can engage on. And the DA that's not interested in this, they don't need to go with, they can stay behind.
Thanks, Honourable Minister. You've said quite a lot, you know. With the issue of the study tour, really, I'm sure in the program we'd have it very early in our next term. More especially a study tour to Africa, more especially to Kenya, because that's one of the best countries on cooperatives. So we'll definitely put that on the program. The other issue, you know, Honorable Bekhale is part of the traditional leadership. That is why she speaks about involving them. I know she just forgot to mention that you could also use the traditional offices if you want space. I think she forgot that. Traditional offices are available because you want to decentralize. The issue, I just want to make a comment, more especially on the decent job. There is an official, you know, universal definition by ILO of what a decent job is. They talk today about decent job, but for us as government is to get people to work. Then it will be the issue of labor to talk about decent job. And then fit that definition. I'll give it to the officials to respond there.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks very much. I think my first comment really was going to be that obviously the strategy is out for comment. And I think the honorable members will also contribute to those efforts. That we can all have the written comments. But obviously, some of the comments here, yes, we won't be answering to them because they're just comments and we'll take that as it is. But I just want to first apologize to Honorable Lee that, you know, maybe we use terms not with any intention of, you know, political connotations and whether it's a sphere or the tier. For us as officials, really, it's just a term that we use. Maybe we need to correct ourselves and check future politically correct terms so that we don't find ourselves in trouble. So apologies about that one. Yes, I think you know, the development of our government strategies, we look at the developed world, but we also look at the developing world because it's always makes sense that you benchmark yourself against the countries that are here to a similar level of development and then take what is good from the developed and also from the developed world. So, yes, but I think we have the statistics on countries like India, Bangladesh, you know, all of them, but here we just decided to highlight the developed world. But in terms of now really structuring our efforts, We look at the developing world. What is it that they're doing? Because when it comes to co-op, they're in front of us. If you take countries like Brazil, India, you know, Kenya, all these countries, when it comes to co-ops, really, how the institutional arrangement has been done and all those things, they are in front of us. So we always look at them. Obviously, South Africa, like Honorable Sinclair is saying, South Africa is a good example of what co-ops can do to the society, to the economy, you know, what happens in the past. Like, as you know, Honorable Lisa, today we have institutions like KWV, APSA, you know, they all come from co-ops, if you wrote in the past, where they had a structured support from government. So so we are a good example if we take our past. And really, you see, we really need an intense
promotion and training of our people in terms of what their cause is. Otherwise, we just let people to form companies, small enterprises. You know, a co-op movement is based on a little bit different set of principles than, you know, just a normal business enterprise. So then what you need as a government is then to structure and put in place certain programs that will really try to support that. So it's not about, you know, starting another agency. I can touch on an honorable funding. Starting, you know, another agency, another training academy. But the issue is looking at what we have right now. How do we reshape and restructure so that there's a little bit of effort and focus on the side of government provision of services, so that we focus really on developing the co-op. Obviously, there will be additional people employed, additional budgets that we will request so that we can establish the agency and the training and academies that we are talking about. But Jeff, I think you touch on more technical questions. When it comes to the monitoring and evaluation system, Honorable Abraham, our incentives people at the DTI, we have realized that this co-op incentive scheme that we have, we give people this grant based on the business plan that they submit. They go away and they implement their business plans, but there isn't much detailed and report back that we get the feedback whether these are successful or not. And you know the issue of this grant is just based on the business plan that is submitted. So what we are trying to do is the business plans that are being submitted are they supporting the economic development strategies that we have? Are they supporting the industrial policy action plans? And what mechanism that we can put together to ensure that we monitor and assist these companies so that we don't come at the end when they have been a failure and try to bring institutions so that we turn it around. So we are working closely with the incentives people really to come up with a monitoring and evaluation mechanism that will ensure that we track on what's happening down there. When it comes to the capacity of municipalities really to play any meaningful role, and again, this was identified as one of the concerns during the Deputy Minister's visit to the provinces. You see, there is a big issue when it comes to the capacity at provincial and municipal level. There's just no capacity at all. That's now generalizing. But what we have done together with the University of Johannesburg, we have developed a program at the University of Johannesburg where officials from the municipalities and provinces will go and be trained on the issues of economic development. The DTI has put aside a budget just to train officials at these spheres of government on issues of economic development and how they could develop their local economic development program. So, but this program is going to be rolled out into all the institutions. We used the University of Johannesburg as a pilot, and right now they are busy working with other universities, developing it, and then it's going to be rolled out to the provinces. And this is one area where really we are trying to contribute to the concerns, to solve the concerns that were raised by the provinces during the visits of the Deputy Minister. Still on that issue of the Deputy Minister's visit, really, we have found that there is still a lot of duplication when it comes to the services that we provide to the people. Even in terms of the organizations that we established to implement the strategies, we find that there is still a lot of duplication. So the the reason why the deputy minister had to visit the provinces was really try to rationalize and streamline the service provision of government. But the issue of cohorts was one of the popular concerns that all the provinces are talking about, that everybody wants to develop and promote this movement, but there is not enough support. There is not enough collaboration between the government, the spheres, and all those things. So from that visit, really, we got a lot of good ideas coming from the provincial departments, from the municipalities, that we have incorporated into the strategy. So those visits were part of the input that went into the development of the strategy. I think Jeff can also touch on that. I think Jeff can then answer on more
The technical issues. Let me start with my colleague who the member of parliament, the honourable member of parliament who raised the issue about the forms. What forms these cooperatives take in Germany, in Spain, in India, and all of those. Let me begin with Spain. Spain has been very successful in establishing worker cooperatives. So you find that in various, particularly in the agricultural sector, in the manufacturing sector, and in fact also most of, even Germany as well, is a very huge bulk of worker cooperatives, plus as well what we call the intermediary cooperatives that are more your service cooperative, your marketing, your supply, your logistics, and all of those kinds of things. We've got all of those details in the report. We could not put all of those details into this particular slide because you tried to summarize for presentation purposes, but all of that is in our report that we carried out, that survey that we carried out internationally in terms of best practice. We've got statistics and numbers and all of that kind of stuff. So first, what it tells us, South Africa is also an example of success on cooperatives, and I just do want to really emphasize that point. Why I'm saying so? I mean, in the 30s, in the 40s, really the Afrikaner community confronted poverty as the biggest issue that really confronted the Afrikaner community. And they took it a deliberate policy, particularly in the agricultural sector, to say we'll establish cooperatives as a way in which we could be able to help farmers to be able to develop. The silos that we're seeing all over South Africa were developed through the cooperative movement in the agricultural sectors, so that you are enabling that community, because they were poor at the time, to mobilize their resources collectively. Collective entrepreneurship is not anti-individual entrepreneurship. The only thing is this, is that individual entrepreneurship is in harmony with collective entrepreneurship. What we're saying to South Africans who are engaging in this space, organize collectively in harmony. Don't bring people who want to produce tomatoes into a cooperative whose primary purpose is to produce potato. So there is disharmony there. But what we tend to find is that is the issue that tends to bedevil cooperatives. People are there, not because they want to be there, because some of them, I think one of the reasons that even the DG has said, that they want to access incentives of government, and we want to be able to encourage that. The starting point is not the incentive of government. The starting point is the business itself. Is it sound? Can it be able to realize the upliftment of the community? Are people adhering to the principles of collective entrepreneurship as espoused in the enterprise itself, which is the cooperative? Those seven principles. This is what must be emphasized when people start these forms of businesses, so that there is sustainability and there is harmony of individual interest and the collective entrepreneurship that takes place there. That is what we are saying in this particular week. We're not saying that individual interest must be subjugated. No. It will always drive as an incentive to people to be able to be in business. But when they get into a cooperative, they must understand that their individual interest must be in harmony with other individual interests, so that there is collective entrepreneurship there. So, is this thing an anti-competitive behavior? No, it's not. Cooperatives targets
what we regard as vulnerable communities, by and large, that's where we want to target as government our support. Those, what we call micro people who are there, who are small, who are emerging, who have not been there. They're not threatening any particular, what we call monopoly there. In fact, those people are the victim of monopolization in our current economy that's highly monopolized. How do you then place them to be able to withstand that monopoly that is there? They can only do it collectively. By entering their vulnerability and collectivize that vulnerability so that it becomes of some meaningful strength to be able to withstand. Because entry in some of these sectors of the economy, the minister, the honorable MP will accept, it's really difficult entering some of the sectors, but some of them could easily be entered if people do embrace the collective entrepreneurship and then use the strength of numbers, the strength of scope, the strength of collective approach to be able to enter there. That is where now the wisdom of cooperative is. This is not the issue that I want to entertain on the ideological front, really, to say this is anti the free market. No, we are for the free market, but we're saying within the free market, this must take place within collective entrepreneurship, enhancing the free market. That's why we've got cooperatives in the United States of America, in Germany, in all these highly recognized free market economies, because this instrument does not in any way strengthen free market system. So I think, yes, there's been a failure in South Africa, particularly on the latter part of South Africa, but that failure can be turned around. And that's what our turnaround strategy is calling for. We can turn that particular failure around and ensure that we bring success. And what we're proposing to the members is this, is that unless South Africa recognizes that the current support that we have is desperate, is small, is splintered all over the show, and is not well systematized and is not well coordinated, even from the government side, because we do need to support cooperatives, which even the Afrikaner communities did. In fact, the establishment of the land bank in the early days of the apartheid was designed primarily to support the farmers, and in fact the cooperative were used as the vehicle to support those farmers. All of them, they were encouraged to really subject themselves to cooperative so that through that particular cooperative way of doing business, they can then be financed easily as a way of collectivizing minimum assets, less assets, and make them meaningful assets. And in that way, they were able to establish the infrastructure, build those silos, buy tractors, buy inputs at reduced cost because they are now buying it in minimum, in bulk, instead of buying it in minimum. Then they're enjoying economies of scale in that way, and the cost goes down. And this is the approach we're bringing to those vulnerable communities, we're saying. Buy back those inputs. Make sure that when you have the fixed capital, which is the tractor, we can then be able to provide fixed investment to all of you as big numbers. And then in that way we bring minimum resources, but which has a bigger impact to people, and then it develops them. This is the kind of thing that we're proposing there. So I think that we don't need to throw the baby with the bathwater and then throw it away. I think this thing is poised to be very successful, and it has all the potential to be successful in this country in eliminating poverty as it was done in the 30s and 40s within South Africa, within the white community. It can also be done to the black communities in reviving them and giving them a position whereby they can withstand even the competition that is very harsh. We are in a globalized environment, and we need to help those particular vulnerable communities in that regard. The Competition Act will always apply to cooperatives whereby we do realize that that threatens a particular sector in terms of its competitiveness. But collectivization in its micro level does not begin in whatsoever to threaten anybody in competition. So I don't think, member, we all remember that this thing is a threat to the competitiveness or the competition in our economy. No, I think that we're dealing with people who are very vulnerable. Big cooperatives that are already large, well developed, which we do have them all over South Africa. Those we are not focused of government. They can stand their own ground. They can compete. We're not going to be assisting them to monopolize the economy. No, we're going to be going to the ones that are vulnerable and build them and make sure that they are protected. That's why the strategy focuses on those vulnerable communities deliberately, because those are the people that we want to be able to help, because that's where jobs are going to come from, and also elimination of poverty if we could achieve that. I mean, the issue about is fear. It's a mistake. It has no political connotation. We will correct it in the future. We'll really remove that particular area. I don't think that it was done deliberately for any political. As government officials, we need to take a view that we're serving this government in all its political form. That is what our duty is, and that's what we'll adhere to. There is nothing of that sort. Now, I want to go to other issues. In the area of traditional leaders, we are indeed bringing them in the strategy. If you look at the bill, section 31, in the bill, just page 31, which is the section dealing with the functions of the agency, we're saying that the agency must work closely with the local municipalities and local houses of traditional leaders in supporting the development of cooperatives. So we bring them deliberately because we want those the traditional leaders to play a role in the development of cooperatives in those, particularly in the rural side of South Africa, where they are very much stronger in that part. Because there is no way, infrastructure, for example, if we're going to be making available business infrastructure to cooperatives, access to information, where we're able to have information centers, where we can bring information to community members, we must work closely with traditional leaders. So they are there. There is no doubt about that. I want to focus really on bigger issues. I want to focus on this issue of the development agency, because for me, that is the issue that I want. Of course, currently government wants to rationalize all agencies. There's no doubt about that. We want, government is going to be looking at how some of these agencies can be rationalized, streamlined, and be made far less than more. But what has come out very clear in South Africa is this, is that if you look at countries like Kenya, Bangladesh, and the rest, in fact, the capacity that they have in assisting the development of cooperatives is enormous. They're using departments. That is the degree of the capacity that is there in those. And they are very much successful, and the statistics speak for itself in those countries. India is the case in point. Kenya is a case in point, and also Bangladesh is a case in point. What does that tell us in South Africa? What do we have as the capacity here in South Africa? Our capacity is that we've got a chief directorate in the Department of Trade and Industry that must drive the development of cooperatives, whereas our sister countries are looking at departments. We've got a very limited capacity in this country in driving the development of cooperatives. And this is something that I want the select committee to take on board. We don't have huge capacity there. When you are engaging with provinces, you find that, in fact, they do have one person who has the responsibility of driving cooperatives. Sometimes you find that some of that person has to juggle with both small business and cooperatives. That is not an adequate capacity that we need if we are serious about cooperatives. So what are we saying? The minister is saying at least the intermediary capacity that we could build in South Africa. Let's have an agency that is solely dedicated on cooperatives. And we could find out that the budget, we are already engaging National Treasury in that regard. And also we are looking at amending this particular legislation dealing with gambling, which is Lotto, to look at how can we access that money available through Lotto so that we can utilize for this particular purpose and see through National Treasury. Because, of course, if you look at that, there is a huge number of money there that is available in billions, which we could also utilize in establishing this particular institution. Now, the institution that we're establishing, we're not laying out new infrastructure. We're not saying that throughout South Africa we're going to be laying out new infrastructure. No. What we are saying is that the existing infrastructure is going to be utilized to build within that existing infrastructure capacity of a cooperative development agency that will specialize and focus on the development of cooperatives and up our capacity in this regard.
to be able to develop properties. So that we don't lend money. At the moment, let me tell you what we're doing, members. We lend money through CIS and other support agencies. But we don't have capacity for follow-up. We need capacity to go and say, when you've invested in some of these cooperatives, we monitor them and we're there with them. We're able to be there with them. Even also, we don't see when there is only a problem. We're able to work with them throughout the process of their development. And this is the kind of capacity that we're able to meet to go and visit all of these cooperatives and be able to identify problems before they become unsolvable. That is what we're calling for. So the issue of the really training academy, we're going to be using FET colleges in some instances here in Eastern Cape. They've already launched one, which is launched in the university. It's going to be an academy within the University of Eastern Cape. These things are not going to be standalones where we're going to lay out, we're asking ourselves to lay out new infrastructure. We're only asking personnel, systems to be put in place and build concentrated capacity within the existing infrastructure. That is what we're calling for here, so that they can then be able to be the agents on the ground that can deliver for us in those in that aspect. The budget is something that we'll have to strive for, but all are going to be housed in one capacity. Like, for instance, the tribunal that we're calling for is going to be within the agency, is going to enforce the legislation. Like, for instance, we're sitting with piles of members of cooperatives in our office who are saying that I've been illegally chased out of a cooperative, there's some violations. We suspect there are corruption that are taking place there. But what has come out very clear is that we don't have the capacity to investigate these things, to go and enforce some of the violation of the principles of cooperation. And we need that capacity. Because otherwise, how do we act on these kinds of complaints that are there? And we need to be enabled to have instruments that are going to go on the ground where there are conflict. And if they cannot resolve those conflicts within cooperatives, then we can then be able to send personnel to resolve those conflicts within cooperatives, to identify where the problems are and be able to sort them out. So those are the things really that we're calling for in the strategy. We believe through that concentrated one-stop-shop approach, we can indeed be able to support. Of course, there's been a failure in some municipalities of different agencies, but we dare not allow this one to fail, ladies and gentlemen, because if that did will happen, then it means that we're not going to achieve what we want to be able to achieve in South Africa. And of course, others, of course, provinces that we must have the department. I don't know whether that is the luxury in South Africa that we could be able to entertain at the moment. These are huge budgets, and therefore, that's why we are coming at the very intermediary level, because we don't want those kinds of things to take place. We are currently engaging the National Treasury to develop the area of cooperative banks. We're saying that all of the village banks that are available currently all over the country, we must try to facilitate a process whereby we end up creating a very good, well-developed cooperative bank in South Africa through a process of facilitating the development and the growth of these village banks so that they ended up cooperating. There is nothing anti-competitiveness to cooperate by cooperatives. And in fact, they are a sector that is sometimes regarded as a threat by other forms of business. And therefore, to challenge and be able to compete, they sometimes cooperate. And this is accepted world over that cooperatives do cooperate as a way of being able to grow themselves. Where some of that cooperation threatens market, then I think our policies and our legislation will deal with that. There is no doubt about that. We have engaged the Competition Commission on that particular issue, and it became clear that that can be handled. On the issue that has been raised on awareness, we want to embark on massive awareness to raise it so that we eliminate people forming cooperatives where we're going to have 88% that are not functioning. This must come to an end, or otherwise it's very costly for Cipro to follow up all these registered cooperatives who are not complying with the annual report that they must provide to the registrar. Of course, that report, which cooperatives do provide every year, of course, it has to do with the what is it that are the annual returns that generated. But what we're saying is that the previous way of reporting, only focusing on the financial aspect of cooperatives, is limited. Cooperatives do engage on the association aspect, and cooperatives must report on that association aspect, adherence to democracy. Are cooperatives adhering to the democratic principles of cooperatives? They must report on that. We need to get reports on those. Are they having annual general meetings every year for members to protect and ensure that members do vote and participate in those cooperatives? Do they all the time board seats, the board meetings? Are board meetings sitting of cooperatives? Do they provide education and training to members? So the report that they must finish to CIPRE is not just only on financial issues, which are financial returns. In fact, in the bill, we're asking all those cooperatives to comply with all the seven principles in reporting about the performance of cooperatives, because that ensures governance, it ensures sustainability. So that is what we are proposing at the moment, not only on the annual returns alone. Now, we do have, and I must say that we are working towards a well-developed bank. When the bank is well-developed of cooperatives, there will be no need for us to continue with the agency. That is why we are envisioning a 10-year period of this agency to provide funding, to provide financial support and non-financial support. When some of these institutions like the Cooperative Bank are well developed in South Africa, then we must not find the government competing with them. We must let them now take care of the funding for cooperatives. But at this juncture, they are well, they are highly underdeveloped. They don't have the capacity to even lend nor even collect savings from members. Until such time, they are well developed. So we are saying, on the next 10-year period, we want this agency to support the cooperatives precisely because they are not yet there. When they are well developed, we as government will have to retreat and allow those cooperative banks to then take their natural business, which is to fund cooperatives. That is the approach that we're espousing in this particular strategy. Collateral system is not there. Poor people don't have vast assets to put collateral. Hence, we are saying the agency must fund for the next 10 years, precisely because the reality is that people don't have money. And therefore, the state must come in South Africa. We are talking of a developmental state, after all, and that developmental state must be seen by providing financial support, by assisting on education and training, by building the capacity of the cooperative movement so that it can stand in its own right. In other countries, in developed countries, they are already standing on their own, some of the cooperatives. But when they started, they all have started through direct support by government. Let me give you an example. In Spain, the government decided that, as one of the incentives which it is there, the government decided that they are going to give a 40% tax exemption to cooperatives over a 10-year period. And what that did, it resulted in a massive growth of worker cooperatives. And they also coupled that with the issue where they said, when members, workers, are retired, they've got what you call this unemployment fund that they get when they're unemployed. And the government says, we'll meet rent by rent if you start a cooperative to be able to create production and create work for yourself. We'll meet you rent by rent on your UIF money that is there. These are the incentives. These are the support mechanisms that they provided in the development of worker cooperatives. If you go to Italy, they went out, government said, we're going to go out there and create a solidarity fund. We're going to put money as government there, but we're going to also ask cooperative organizations to put money into that solidarity fund. That solidarity fund was utilized to develop cooperatives. In Canada, there is what you call CDI, a cooperative development institution, that is their institute. That one is giving government money to be able to fund cooperatives in Canada. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Government is always there to provide financial support, non-financial support, there is nothing in that particular practice that is anti-competitiveness or is anti the free market. We are there as government to build the supply side of cooperatives, and we must come in building that supply side of cooperatives to ensure that they are sustainable, they are able to be developed. And we're saying that through this agency, we need to come in big time to ensure that cooperatives survive. And then we can help those vulnerable communities to create self-employment. When we talk about membership, cooperatives create two things. They've got ownership, which are members. Those members grow. Sometimes in financial cooperatives, you find them that there are millions of them who become members of a cooperative bank, who are putting their savings there, who are able to then get loans from their particular bank. That is what that membership must grow. And also, similarly, in cooperatives that are your supply side, what you call marketing cooperatives, we do have members who are then, like consumer cooperatives, who are then buyers of goods and services from a consumer cooperative. These become sometimes hundreds, thousands, or millions. But we do need those people to be self-guided so that good corporate governance within cooperatives takes place. It means those seven principles must be insisted upon, and we must make sure that we do not dare fail in ensuring that there is training of members, there is training of ordinary members, training of board members, training of managers, so that when we start saying to them, you are not complying with the law and bringing penalties, we have indeed trained them to comply with these things. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm sure there are one or two issues that were not covered. The issue of profit and surplus.
Oh, yeah.
Before you cover that, maybe we'll cover if there's a follow-up on the other issues. But all I wanted to stress to, even to the honorable members, is that this presentation is about integration strategy. You know, I'll put an example in KwaZulu-Natal. We have got co-ops in the departments of agriculture, economic development, transport, social development. Now, the idea is we need to integrate. There must be integration. And also noting that KwaZulu-Natal was the highest in the registration of co-ops, but at the same time it was also the highest in the failure in the mortality rate. So we need to take that. One question that I would add is the issue of the cooperative bank or financial cooperative. Will they not be subjected to the treasury regulations? The 200 million and all that, so that because if we don't move with that in the rural communities, because that will be the key. If you can move with the cooperative bank, then there will be development in rural communities. Honorable Dehales, Honorable Funding, Honorable Lee.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to thank the department that they are now getting the traditional leaders involved. But they forgot to mention them, as they will be taking the officials to Pretoria for trading. I think even in our rural offices, traditional offices, we have the officials. Can't they be part? Thanks.
Honorable Chairperson, I'm still very, very, very concerned. And hierdie ding word reg gepraat. We do not have stats in front of us that says, and this is what I now ask the department to provide us with, the population numbers in India, Bangladesh, and all these countries that you use as examples, indicating its numbers and then the numbers below the poverty rate and the contribution to the GDP by the co-ops and the poverty relief rate over the past 10 years and what was the government contribution per country. Because that, those stats, will give us, if we're honest with the stats, will give us the picture. Because nobody is going to tell me that in this document of yours, on page, the strategy, the page 20, the Indian cooperative movement to date has become one of the largest in the world. 67% of households and 99% of rural communities are involved in one way or another in the cooperative sector. But that's it. That's where it stops. You do not say what the development was and how those co-ops are contributing and what poverty relief. So yes, you come with a strategy which I'm not so sure whether it will be implemented. I'm horrified to hear that it's going to come from Lotto, because a lot of NGOs that really do a lot of social development and social care to communities only have the Lotto, because they are not always sustainable. However, yeah, we are trying to, with co-ops, it's meant to be a business. It's meant to be sustainable. So let's just get the big picture first. And if you can supply us with that, so that we can see and really continue this conversation, I'd be most happy. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I really don't want to get into a debate with the Honourable Sinclair and others. The examples that get thrown at us of success in the past were not the co-ops we're talking about today. They were coordinated efforts to market products, to do buying. When the tractors were bought, they were bought by individuals, not by the co-op. The co-op supplied the tractor at a good price because of economies of scale. And that's not the kind of co-op we're talking about today. Today we're talking about co-ops where people go into business as a group. Not farming on my own. I don't know how to market my maize, so we form a co-op to do the marketing for us, to get us the best deal, to build the silos and so on. But I'm still growing my own maize. I'm still benefiting from, personally, as an individual, from my efforts. And that's the difficulty with the present co-op design. It does not say, let's group our efforts in marketing and buying or whatever it is, an irrigation scheme, and then as individuals we access those benefits. It says, let's do this together. Let's grow the maize together. So tomorrow, I don't feel like getting up early, but my other fellow member is an active guy and he's out there applying. And he says, but, hey, Aaron, you didn't work yesterday, and you want to take the same profit as I took, as I get. That's the problem with the co-ops as they design. And no one can argue that the coordination to access discounts, to access markets, isn't good. And that's where they've been successful. No co-ops have been successful where you try and get people to do to share their entrepreneurship together. They are just not successful. I mean, the example that I've raised before, and it's a recent one, outside Ladysmith, that farming co-op or community got all the assistance they want. They were given tractors. They were given livestock. And what's happened to it? It's collapsing because the one that says, hey, he's a job and a com. I don't know, he's a tatimalia. And so the thing's collapsing. Now they're going to split it all up and give people little plots of ground so that they farm for themselves. You see? And so it's back to the individual. And it's saying the guys who don't want to work, who don't want to be, you know, ready, they want the profit, but they don't want to put in the effort, well, they must go. And so I'm saying that there is a place for cooperative, if you want, but group buying, group marketing, sure, absolutely, no doubt about it. And that's the history you keep referring to with the Afrikaners. They all were individual farmers. Look at the returns, ex-servicemen. They were given little plots of land up there in Pongola, and the irrigation scheme was put in for them. So they farmed for themselves, and what happened? Slowly, slowly, the lazy oaks sold up to the other oaks who were working hard, their own little bits of ground. And so now you've got big farmers in Pongola. Not little, no co-op. the state intervened in terms of the services, making it giving them the opportunity, and they grouped together to market the sugar cane, and they built a sugar mill together, that they grew their own sugar cane. They benefit from their own individual. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the point I'm trying to make. There is no disagreement between me, Honourable Sinclair, and the officials in terms of group buying, group access to markets and so on. No problem at all. But as soon as you take the incentive away from the individual to benefit for himself, personally by his hard work, then you're doomed. Then it's a failure. There's no question about it. It will fail. And it has failed throughout history. When you try and get people to do the work together for the benefit of all, and the one oak works hard, the other oak doesn't work hard, dissension is inevitable. No matter how many structures you put inside to go in there and advise about, you know, you've got to all work together, and if we all agree we're going to be on the job at 7 o'clock, we must all be there, one oak can't sleep until 8 o'clock, or not go to work at all, that's the doomed to failure that we talk about. No argument about the economies of scale. Absolutely true. Thank you.
Yeah, I will give the department to respond, but we note that together we can do more. Yeah, you will respond to that. Now, I'm saying, but also, you know, the issue of co-ops as catalyst for job creation, because we cannot just be doing co-ops, and the thing should be, what jobs are we creating? There you covered with Honourable Lee's explanation that we are together. Honourable Lee, Sinclair?
Yes, I agree with what people say.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I was a bit worried at the beginning when my colleague Jeff referred to Honorable Sinclair as a colleague. No. Thanks very much. But I just want to get the issue of financing the co-ops. Really. I think for me, whether you're talking about co-ops or large and small enterprises. Here in South Africa, we still have to change the approach, really. But I think if I look at the commercial banks, I tend to support those people who say maybe we just have to leave the commercial banks the way they operate. Because obviously they abide to these international Basel agreements and all these things. Through their strong regulatory framework, they were able really to ensure that we as a country, we don't plunge into this financial crisis many developed countries found themselves in. So what do you do now to support economic development, more especially when it comes to funding or financing this, the businesses? If we just to touch on it, if we say we are a developmental state, I think government would have to look at taking risk on behalf of state or of its own people. I'm glad that the Department of Economic Development is now looking at how do we reduce the cost of doing business, more especially when it comes to the cost of finance. And I'm told that they are looking at using the funds like the UIF and all those things to support the funding of economic development. But really, as a development state, if we are one, we will have to look at how government really intervene on that area to ensure that we reduce, more especially the cost of finance, because you wouldn't expect banks to abide to all these grand international agreements like the Basel II. They're moving to Basel III now. And on the other side, you want to extend credit and to the so-called unbanked. So the government would have to play a huge part there. So when it comes to the co-op banks, the development of co-op banks and all those, we will have to see how we support the cooperative banks in terms of the collateral they might need to bring in as a result of complying to some of these regulations. And then on the creation of demand for co-ops. Really, again, I'm just expanding on this. It's not about creating demand for co-ops, but also creating demand for small enterprises as a whole, so that you increase their contribution to the GDP, and you assist the small guys who can't access, don't have the means to access the market. So this will have to do through the procurement, amending the procurement legislation. At the moment, we started with the amending the triple PFA regulations so that you can bring in the issues of local procurement and local manufacturing, really to support industrial policy and industrialization of the country. Because our procurement, if it still relies on them, who's providing the best price, without really considering the issues of local manufacturing and job creation, then we always have this problem of small enterprises and co-ops not being able to access the business generated through government procurement. So we have to look at the government procurement legislation so that we really assist the development of co-ops in this case through that. The training program that we are designing with the University of Johannesburg, Honorable Dukhali, I think it will be open to officials even at the traditional offices. We'll have to carefully have to coordinate that with the chief director responsible for regional economic development, who is also working with the municipalities on the LEDs. So that the officials at that level also attend the courses. But some of these are just comments, really. I don't know, Chair, whether I want to touch on some.
The issue of surplus vis-a-vis profit. There are two kinds. Honorable, I need to go to you first, all right? Because in fact, I enjoyed the discussion with you. In fact, I want to have it more if I could. Not because I'm of your party, just that is, I like to engage with these issues. There are two kinds of cooperatives that could be established, broadly defined. There are those that are service cooperatives, which are your marketing, which are your bulk buying, and they are all providing service-orientated aspect to people who are producing, who are in any particular activities that they involved in a commodity, manufacturing and whatnot, and then they buy together or they distribute together and they sell together, they all do it or they purchase together. That is more on the service front of things, which you are correct. Yes, the bulk of agricultural cooperatives played in that space. And in fact, let me give you an example. When it comes to silos, I can assure you, individual farmers could not build those silos. There was no way that they could be able to build, because the investment that would go into those silos was massive. So what then it did, the Africana community organized and all the farmers, like for instance in Orange Free State, to establish a cooperative and make contribution as individual members who were farmers there, and then also government put money through the land bank and all the other financial institutions to build those silos. In fact, most of them were invested by government money, which some of them were privatized later though, but they were, the bulk of investment come from the state there. So through that particular process, cooperatives then were the vehicle to establish those particular silos, and then all the members who were members of those cooperatives then started putting maize into those silos because they were subscribers to those particular things. That is just a typical example. We can go into Cape when it comes to the grapes and all that, and we can even espouse a particular case there. But there is another form of cooperative that, in fact, is taking place and is taking shape in South Africa. It's a worker co-op. All right. Where people are coming together to, there are two forms there within that area. It's what we call worker cooperatives, where they own the means of production, if I could lose that particular language, factory, machinery, and what, and they bring their skills there, and they own and they pay each other the issue of services, and then they pay each other based on the input by the members there. But also, they can sell their labor purely, just to sell their labor into the market within that worker cooperative. So what I'm saying is that there you can have members coming together to own the means of production as entrepreneurs. Then they've got the journalist phase. They are, on one hand, owners, at the same time as employees. It's always the case, but they're entrepreneur and also as employees. That's the character of the worker co-op it takes. So what I'm saying, therefore, in that respect, that must be supported as well. In South Africa, you cannot therefore say that approach, because they create employment, which the Honorable Chairperson has just said, it creates massive employment, and it also talks to poverty alleviation, because people now are doing things for themselves. And in the same time, they're owning that means of production, and therefore they're entrepreneurs in that particular, in the parlance of the language of entrepreneurship. So you can't ignore that part as well. It has to be supported, it has to be driven, and it is the success with which Spain is successful today, though it is facing some financial challenges now, but it is built on that particular success. And there is a data which we're going to provide, Honorable Member, on Brazil. We're going to give you the GDP contribution of cooperatives, and we can slice it on sector by sector, on India, on Canada. We've got all of that data. We can give it to you in all its form. And in fact, that's what we undertake to give the select committee, that kind of information. I'll put it together, and then I will chapter them, distribute to the members so that you could see these things. We're not talking theory. They are there, and we could slice the sectors and the contribution of those sectors to the GDP as a whole, which are cooperative sector. So,
can I give Honourable Van Ley, and she just want to interject there?
Thank you, Chairperson. Sir, I also want to know the poverty lines and how many people still live below the poverty line. So I do not only want the beautiful picture.
Okay.
I don't know if you understood by Afrikaans. The co-op thing is being, hy word reg gepraat. You are a very good marketer of co-ops. You operate above the problems, and you're only telling the good side of co-ops. I want to see over the world and the countries that you're using what the poverty lines are. You mustn't just say there are 92% or 99% of people involved in co-ops. You must also say how many of those people are still living below the bread line, and how much the government has contributed to those co-ops and how then successful they are. Thank you.
We will provide that information, and we will give it to you. Of course, other countries, the poverty line, there are still substantial people, even in India. I mean, but without going there, and then that cannot only be the answer to cooperatives, though. I mean, just as an issue there, poverty is a contribution of the overall society to eradicate it. But
they have some success that we could then bring, and there are some failures that we can bring also. It's not just a closer picture that we're putting, but what we're emphasizing is that where investment and attention and a drive has been made to cooperatives, and there is a direct support, that support has resulted in success of cooperatives as a form of business in these communities that we're talking about, and we'll give data to that reality. And just to add, the surplus vis-a-vis now, the profit to come back there. Now, only business, other forms of business, let's say a shareholder company, makes profit through what it does. There are shareholders who invest shares and their own investment into companies, and they get their returns based on the shares that they've put in into the company. So if you put 40%, then you get dividend, 40% dividend back to you as a profit. And therefore, there what the entity does, it then market or it sells or it produces, whatever it produces, into the market, and then it generates profits through that. It doesn't do it through you as shareholders. Yours is just to put an investment there through shareholding, and then you then get the returns on your capital investment that you put in into the entity. That's how other forms of business, then all of that then becomes profit. But with cooperatives, it's the opposite. Your shareholding does not give you income. It's not your shareholding into a cooperative that generates you income. What generates income for you, which is the patronage refund, is the patronage that you deliver to cooperatives. So there is an overcharge. Let's say if you want to be able to, we are marketing maize, we're selling maize into the market on behalf of the members of that cooperative. What we then do, or we buy inputs for them, there is a charge, an overcharge that a cooperative does through that kind of a service it renders to members. And then when it has made some markup on it, part of it invests back to cooperative, and then the other one becomes a patronage return based on the patronage that you've contributed. Then always that is regarded as a surplus that is returned to members as a patronage. Or some people use what they call bonuses. That's the other term that they tend to use in that particular regard. So in that respect, it is through the services that you utilize or through the overcharge that you are using on the corporate in meeting that need, that then that becomes a surplus. It is not a classical profit as we know it in other forms of businesses. That's the difference that we need to note between the other form of a business and a cooperative. It is the need that is met, and that need has a particular charge, and some of that charge it can be above the market rate. To that extent, then it gets returned back as a surplus to the members by the cooperative. And in some instances, it generates what we regard as the surplus out of the economies of scale, that then gets returned back as a patronage contribution out of that surplus that was generated back to members. But it doesn't seek out to make profit for shareholders. There are no shareholders there. What we do, there are members. There is what you call member shareholding within the cooperative. And that member shareholding does not appreciate, as will be the case in a company, where you then generate it based on the way the company operates. That's the difference that is there between surplus and a profit in that particular regard, in a simplistic way, just to make it much simpler and easier for people to understand. Yes. And then on the issue of the cooperative bank and the requirement on legislation, there are two forms of banks that are going to be established under the Cooperative Development Act that was promulgated, I think, in 2009 or somehow. We are going to have those cooperatives that are going to be above $10 million and above are going to be regulated by the Reserve Bank of South Africa. And the ones that are from $10 million and below are going to be regulated by the Cooperative Banks Development Agency that is housed within National Treasury. And there, the regulatory requirements are to the level of those cooperatives. They've been made easier, they've been simplified, and they've been made less costly based on that economic reality of those cooperatives. So we do have the legislation that speaks to that. Thank you very much, members.
Honorable Liz, your wanted to say something. Honorable Nyambi, are you clear on the profit and surplus?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, just a quick one. I mean, it's quite clear what's meant by the surplus, but I think that what people should understand is that every cent that's repatriated to the members then becomes taxable in the members' hands. So whether it's taxed as profit in the shop or it's taxed as profit in the members' hands, there's a different rate, perhaps, and perhaps it's actually advantageous to have it taxed in the co-op before it's repatriated. I don't know, that's a tax issue. But it doesn't escape tax. So whether it's called a profit or a surplus, at the end of the day, someone pays the tax on it.
Yeah.
At the moment, it doesn't escape the tax. That is true. But the question we should ask ourselves, should we subject cooperative, particularly a cooperative itself, to taxation when what it owes there, in fact, it's money for members. It's more like a debt which it has to repatriate back to members. And therefore, it sits on the left side of the balance sheet of the cooperative. And therefore, should it be really liable to taxation, that thing, because it's an overcharge, that issue. And in fact, there is no economy that is taking place there. That is an overcharge of members. Now, why should members be taxed on something that they've been overcharged? So this is the issue that we're engaging National Treasury on. I don't want to belabor the point. And then what we're saying is that whatever is given to members must only be taxed at the members' level. To develop cooperatives, that's not subjected to taxation when, in fact, what they have only there is an overcharge from its own members, you see. And yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the co-op will pay. I think I can presume that there will be no follow-up on this issue, and I think it is quite true that in the presentation quite a lot was made also on the amendment, obviously, on cooperatives. And I'm sure what is required from members is contribution on the strategy. Please go through it so that we contribute more, especially in our provinces, so that people would actually know what's going to happen. And in our constituency, so that then we come up with some suggestions that would be, you know, accessible to the ordinary people. Thanks very much to the department, Mr. Zigote. That was a well-done presentation. And thanks very much to our old, very old Mr. Roach. Honorable member of this committee is always here. This meeting, Honorable Sinclair.